Thanks for tuning in to the Secret Ingredient Livecast, where we believe that everyone has a story behind the story, and that is where the secret ingredient lives. Now, unleashing that secret ingredient through a combination of personalized custom content, social media, and paid advertising is the best way to build the relationships you need to grow your business today. Now, today's guest is a smorgasbord of experience, knowledge, nonsense, and diverse background. He's a baseball player, a worship leader, a father, a husband, a sales trainer, weightlifting, motorcycle riding guy, and an amazing ironing board surfer. He has the best reason that I have ever heard for twisting a knee and needing crutches. His attach rate is strong, and his number one reason to go home is to number two. His most recent accomplishment is becoming a certified Maxwell Leadership Coach, and I have no idea where this conversation is going to go today. But I do know that it's going to be a hoot. I am fortunate and a little anxious to introduce my good friend, former co-worker, and one of the most genuine good guys that I know, Mr. Chris Burns. What's up, Bird Dog?
Wow, that is easily, hands down, the best introduction I have. Do we need to say anything else? I feel like people know me pretty good. I like when you said his number one reason to go home is number two.
That's a thing, man. Hey,
I gotta go.
What's nice? No, I know you prepped properly today.
Oh yeah. And I appreciate it. You know, I love you, Adam, and you know, I've enjoyed every minute of our friendship. Never a dull moment, you know, with whenever we get in a room and start talking about leadership and development and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So I'm blessed to be here. Thank you for having me on the show. So
oh, I appreciate that. There, if you play your cards right, there may even be some LARPing today.
Ooh.
No one loves a good LARP the way my man Burns does. Burns, how long have we known each other and why? How do we meet?
We met when we were both working for Wireless Partners, Verizon Wireless Premium Retailer. Man, back in the day. It was probably 10 or 12 years ago in that ballpark.
I'd say 10 or 11.
I've lived in Lakewood now for going on 11 years, and we moved up here 2009. I think probably 9 or 10 years we've been friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was within the first year and a half I was at Wireless Partners when you came on board, so.
Yeah, you were like the corporate trainer, and then go figure they shifted sort of how the regions were set up, et cetera. Kind of shifted gears.
Oh yeah. I made my living in the wireless industry by always saying yes. You know, like you say yes to your dream. You know, like I wanted to be a trainer, I wanted to develop people, I wanted to work with leaders, I wanted to mentor salespeople. And everything I've been asked to do in the wireless industry in one way or another has helped me live into that dream. So, you know, I'm not saying be a yes man to a person. I'm saying be a yes man or a yes woman to your dream. You know, you always got to say yes to that next step. And if that next step finds you and it's, you know, it's living into your financial goals as well as your, you know, your career goals and your life goals, like why say no?
Right. You know? So for a while, both of us, I think, found good next steps within that company. I know I matured a ton personally and professionally at Wireless Partners until that next yes took me out of there.
Yeah. You definitely said yes to your dream. I was so sad and also so proud of you when you left Wireless Partners to kind of do your own thing. And I know that day for you, and wherever you were at Go Wireless at that point, right?
Yeah, it had transitioned to Go, and I was not going to be a good Go employee.
They were not
going to like me, and I was not going to like them. Nothing against them at all. It's actually a fantastic organization. It just was not a good fit for me, which is okay.
Yeah.
that's all right. Yeah, I can't handle that much control. I'm a bad employee.
Yeah, when I was at Wireless Partners, we met when I was a trainer, and I got that gig by saying yes. At the time I transitioned to be a trainer, I was a regional sales manager, I think, at the time. And you know, the owner, Jackie, she called me on the phone and she said, hey, I need you to drive to Columbus to have a meeting with me. And of course, my heart sank and swallowed the biggest open in my throat and drove down to Columbus and met with her. And she said, you know, you're doing it. You're doing a great job as a, I think I was leading 11 stores at that point as a regional manager. And she said, you know, we want a territory. We want you to be the trainer for, I think we had like 26 or 28 stores at the time. And I thought that sounded like a cool gig. So yeah, I absolutely said yes to it. So I went from mentoring coaches and training salespeople to training, you know, the salespeople and the leaders all across the company. So I put on leadership boot camps and, you know, sales trainings and stuff like that. And that was a fun gig. A lot of travel, but it was definitely a fun gig. So
you were LARPing for a living.
I was LARPing for a living. Will LARP for food.
Yeah. Just in case no one knows what our antiquated joke there is, it's LARP is live action role play.
Live action role play, baby.
Oh my God. What do normal people call it?
Role play?
Like role play? Just practicing?
There's nerds out there that probably call it skill drills, you know?
Skill drill. Yeah, skill drill. No, we're LARPing today, baby. And it was you and was Ben there at that time?
Yeah. At that point, Ben was still in Marion, I think.
Okay. Running stores.
He was either a store manager in Marion or he was running a few stores for Jackie.
Him and his blanket.
Yeah, Jackie.
Oh, man. So you were originally an Alto guy.
That was wireless partner gig. That was really like up until that point, like, you know, that was the bulk of my development, you know, and like I wish I would have had an Adam LaFaber in my life to walk me through the first few stages of my career. I'd been in the wireless industry for probably 3 or 4 years as a mediocre to subpar employee and, you know, not making a lot of money. And then I got involved with wireless partners and Alex Yater kind of took me under his wing and started to mentor me and coach me and really develop me. And I remember when, you know, for anybody who's listening, who maybe lacks courage or lacks taking that next step to develop yourself, this is a really good story. I remember I was a store manager. I'd been a store manager for just a couple of months at Wireless Partners. And this was, I'd already been in the industry at Alltel for like three and a half years at this point, but I thought I was ready for that next step to lead multiple stores. And I remember Jackie wanted to start opening up new Verizon stores in the Northeast Ohio area. And, you know, I was just pretentious enough to think that I was the right person for that job. Right. So I call up Jackie and I'm like, hey, I want to come meet with you. You know, this was wanted to meet with me to make me a trainer, but I said, I want to come meet with you. I need an hour of your time. I'll take you out to lunch. So we met, I think down in New Philly at a Buffalo Wild Wings or something. And I took her out to lunch and I said, Jackie, you know, you wanted to start expanding to different areas of Ohio. You mentioned Northeast Ohio as the biggest area of growth for you. I want to open those stores. I want to lead those stores. I want to recruit. I want to train. And we opened up a store in first North Ridgeville and Vermilion. So I moved to Elyria, opened up a store basically on either side of me. And then from there it was Oberlin, Amherst, Massillon. You know, we just started opening up stores left and right. And I remember my whole drive to Columbus to meet Jackie, to try to convince her to make me a multi-unit manager, district manager, whatever you, I don't even think I had a title for the first 6 months, but I was sweating bullets and I was so nervous to meet with her because this was like my sales pitch, right? Like I was like, all right, I'm a store manager doing very well. I need to convince this woman to basically turn over the keys to what she wanted to become like a third of the company. And within the next few years,
right.
And, you know, she said yes, ultimately. And, you know, she first wanted to make sure it was a good fit for me and my family. And then I talked to my wife about moving 3 hours away and, man, have the courage, step out on a limb, take a risk. Because What's the worst that would have happened if she would have said no? I still would have had my job as a store manager, right? But it was because I had the guts to step out on a limb and ask for something I really wanted and to prove that I could do it. That was a turning point in my life. So definitely.
So Burns, that seems like to me, to you, to some of the other leaders that you and I know that I would think of like a fairly obvious thing to do, because you're right. Like what's the worst could happen? So, you know, it's not like she's going to eat my face off my face. Now, Jackie could be intimidating at times, but she was actually a really good lady. And yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed my interactions with her, except for that Christmas tree thing. But beyond that, it was all good. She was great. She was actually a great owner. But it might seem obvious to us, but to some people, it's not so obvious to step out in faith or step out in you know, belief in yourself or whatever. Why is that? Why is that? And where do you have do you recognize the time in your life that actually changed, or that you were cognizant that you were going to do things to move forward where other people were not?
Yeah, I think to answer your first question, I think the reason people don't do that is because they think they're not worthy for some reason. They think that, you know, we grow up in sometimes environments where we're told that we're not good enough. You know, we look at the cover of a magazine and the magazine says we're not pretty enough. We read a leadership book and we don't think, wow, I'm empowered by this book. We think I could never do this. Like I could never stand on a stage and talk to people. I could never meet with someone one-on-one and expect to develop them. And we just get, I think our own imbalance, at least for me, my own imbalance is caused by my feeling of an inadequacy sometimes. And that brings out this low underlying level of anxiety. And rather than saying yes to something like that, and I'm going to do this and I'm going to be successful, but do whatever it takes to do this, think to ourselves, yeah, I don't know who's going to run these stores, but that sounds like, you know, a job that I could never do. That sounds like something I could never live up to. And I think for me, what the turning point was for me was when I had a son. For me, it was having my son, because I went from being a mediocre salesperson to that really no other human. I mean, my wife was a little bit dependent on me financially, but if something were to happen to me, she would have been okay. And now all of a sudden I have this human child that I'm responsible for. And if I'm not successful, he might not eat, you know? And that was very real for me. And once I had my son, I went also when my son was born, and I went from being a mediocre to, you know, bottom tier salesperson to being one of the top 15 reps in Ohio out of several hundred salespeople, because I gave myself no other option than to be successful, you know? And I just continued that, right? Like it wasn't a matter of now all of a sudden a switch is flipped and I am worthy. I still felt inadequate. I still had my moments of stress and anxiety. I had this sense
but it
of,
didn't matter.
I cannot. Yeah, it didn't matter. It didn't matter.
Like, yeah, there's no choice.
I had no choice but to be the best, because I wanted
that's sort
to
have of that,
a son. Yeah. And that's
I'm calling that the your Cortez moment. That's what I'm calling that. The moment that you realize that it's burned the ships. That there's no you don't have a choice. Just burn the ships.
Yep. I burned the ships. And I realized that, you know, when you have another human life that's relying on you in every way, there's no choice. Now I'm not saying, you know, go out and everybody have kids so that you'll further your career, right? But why?
In fact, please don't.
Well, yeah, but there's some serious, not to get all serious, but there's some serious implications when you say my why is my family. There's some serious implications, and you don't ever want to say that lightly, because if one of my leaders now says my why is my family, that allows me an opportunity to say, hey, you're not living in who you said you wanted to be. You're not living into who God designed you to be. If you're going to tell me that your why is your family, then every time you slack off, that's you not being as good of a father as you wanted to be, or as good of a mother as you wanted to be, or good of a spouse. If your why is your family, then your actions really need to reflect that. you know, and that's serious stuff, you know?
Well, I loved managing to behaviors using that, right? Because you get people to tell you their why, and you get them to be honest with you, and not like you're building a relationship or a rapport, and hopefully adding some value to their life, not just their work life, but their life, right? Yeah. From a mentoring standpoint, hopefully. And then when they tell you what their why is, or you have these discussions, and then their behavior is incongruent with what they told you mattered, right? Because that's really what they're saying. This stuff matters. And then their behavior does not line up with that. It's not in alignment with what they said. It's just a very easy thing. Now, it's not me being a jerk. I'm not being an asshole to you saying, hey, you suck at life and calculus and also sales, and you're not hitting, you know, you didn't sell a jet pack this month. It's not that. It's you told me that this stuff mattered, and your behavior, I couldn't even convict you of it in a court of law. There's no evidence that this stuff matters by your behavior. I love having those real conversations, because then it allows us to have real behavioral conversations.
Yeah. And ironically enough, people love to have, to be on the receiving end of those conversations. You know, like one of the things that I've learned.
Yeah.
I've learned in leadership is that, you know, if I'm going to be your leader and I'm going to be your mentor, and this is a John Maxwell, like, this isn't my idea. I steal this shamelessly every day, but if I'm going to develop you as your mentor, I'm going to lead you with truth and with grace. I'm going to lead you with care and with candor. If I have too much candor and I don't have any care, now I'm just a prick, right? And I'm just like cramming my ideas down your throat, right? But if I have too much care, but not enough candor, not enough honesty, now I'm being a cheerleader of your mediocrity. And that's not acceptable either. So I'm going to come to you and I'm going to challenge you with all the love in my heart. I'm going to challenge you, because sometimes to be a good leader, to be a good mentor, we need to care more about someone's development than we do about their feelings in that moment. And if we've built that loyalty, we've built that relationship with them, then they know that those difficult conversations are coming out of a place of love, and they're coming out of a desire to make you, you know, I say living into who God was designed you to be. Like, I truly feel that God didn't design any of us to be losers, right? God wants us to be winners. We want to be winners. And when we don't live into who we were designed to be, who we want to be, who we have dreams to be, then it's the mentor or the coach in, you know, a loving way. So.
Well, when you play small ball, it's serving no one. It's not serving you. It's not serving your team. It's not serving your family. It's not serving anybody. And I actually think, you know, I've had this discussion. It's actually called something. You might know this with your recent training. Is it like situational trust or something like that? I can't remember. But basically, what it boils down to is, I don't think it's very nice to not tell people the truth. And if they are not living up to who they're supposed to, I don't see that being mean. You know, as long as it's more about bedside manner and delivery, right? You know, I'm not going to like just eat somebody's face off, but maybe I've been known to do that a little, but usually not. Usually it's, hey, what are you doing here? And how do I help you? Because this is not what you told me you wanted. So how do I help you get what it is that you want? You and I have had many of those conversations in the back of Amherst.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so John Maxwell, I apologize in advance if I talk a lot about John Maxwell, but that's where I've got the majority of my coach training, my leadership training. And John Maxwell talks about the five levels of leadership, right? And and the care versus candor, the difficult conversations come at level three, right? So, you know, if I got hired on in an organization and all I have is a title and no one knows me from Adam, no pun intended, nobody knows me, they have to follow me because I have a title, right? They're not following me because they're not following me because they're loyal. They're not following me because they don't want to let me down. They're following me because I have a title. So you start to build that relationship. Cannot have you know, potentially feeling hurt in conversations with people at level one or even level two. Level two, people follow you because they like you. You need to be a likable person. If someone's going to, you know, if anyone's ever going to be on your team and be in your corner and run through walls with you and for you, they have to like you. Level three is where you start to leverage the relationship that you've built with them in order to drive results. Level three is my favorite level because, you know, hey man, like I linked up arms with you. I've gone to bat for you. We've been in the trenches now. You know, you know that I bleed with you, but we got to get something fixed. And how are we going to do it? And it's like, you know, now if I just went into that conversation on day one without building the relationship and building the trust and the loyalty, you're not going to do what I say. You're not going to trust me for nothing. Right. So I love getting to that level. And you do that naturally. Like you progress up the levels with someone quickly because of your relationship and, you know, your reputation as a leader precedes you. So people trust you because other people trust you. Right. And that's kind of where I'm hope to be and kind of where I'm at in my organization. But, you know, you get to that level. It's like, hey, like you've seen me have your back many, many times. Like you've seen me, we've been in the trenches. You trust me now. Now I'm going to leverage your loyalty, leverage that relationship with you in order to figure out how we're going to drive results together. And maybe that means maybe hurting your feelings by just being honest with you. But I, you know, you got to trust me. We're both going to end up better on the other side of that conversation.
It's more mean to lie to you. I prefer you're just honest. Like that's actually one of our, we don't do a mission statement here. It's called guiding principles and it's all about action, like actual activity. And because very often mission statements are just this nonsense about integrity and telling the truth. And man, if you're in business and you're not having integrity and telling the truth, like you need to actually put that on a piece of paper. You probably are already crap. Like that's not good already. You know, that's just words and whatever. It's silly. So we want to make sure that the guiding principles or the mission statement actually does guide behavior and it does act as like a North Star or whatever. And one of those things is, I'll share two of them with you actually. One is Think Upstream. I'm sure you're familiar with the book Upstream. And then the other one is always have real conversations. And that includes with me, right? So if you're a freelancer, you're an employee or even a client, whatever, you have fair game to have real conversations with me. And you just have to say that, right? So this is not the time that we're going to get our feelings hurt. This is not the time that we're going to make it about us or whatever, or me. This is about the time that we're going to have a real damn conversation because that's how we get on the other side of the wall. We don't get there dicking around. We get on the other side of the wall by doing this and then figuring out how to get across whatever the bridge is or wall or whatever barrier we have. We have real conversations. One of the first things at day one, we're going to have real conversations. They just kind of look at me and I'm like, oh, ones, you know, like where you get your feelings hurt and stuff, those ones. But you're allowed to have them with me too. Yeah. And you're like, sure. I promise. I absolutely promise.
It's like the analogy of, you'll like this because you're as silly as I am. It's like the analogy of the booger and the zipper, right? It's the analogy of the booger and the zipper. If you're at a party with someone and you care about them at all, and they got a booger hanging out of their nose, are you going to ignore that and let them walk around the rest of the night with a booger hanging out of their nose? Nope. I'm going to point it out right now so you can get rid of that. And so it's not going to affect the rest of your conversations or your zipper. Hey, buddy, your zipper's down. Your zipper's down, buddy. Oh, cool. Zip. You move on about your day, but you got to have the courage to have that conversation with them out because why? Because you care about that person, right? Like I don't want to, if my zipper was down, I'd want somebody to tell me if I'm doing something. If one of my behaviors is inconsistent with a core value, then by all means, love me by calling me out on it. By all means.
Right. So. Burns, you brought something up earlier about how your why changed with the birth of your son. Tell me a little bit about how the how changes once you become a parent. Because I think that it's not just the why you're doing things, it's also the how. I think having a kid makes you a better leader and being a leader makes you a better parent. So talk to me a little bit about your experience with that.
Yeah. So the first thing that comes to mind is how I treat people after I've had kids, because I went from, you know, anybody in Conway Communications that as I'm the vice president of sales in a wireless zone franchise that have, we have 32 stores and I'm the VP of sales, and they all look at me like a father figure. Right.
Mm-hmm. And
That's very intentional. Accident. It's not an accident. They look at me like a dad, because once I had kids, I intrinsically started treating people who were several years younger than me as if they're my kids, right? In a sense. Now, I'm not going to discipline mm-hmm. them like I would my kid. I'm not going to, you know, talk to them exactly as I would my kid, but I take responsibility for them in my heart because I'm one's kid, right? So that's the first thing is just look. Was my kid, would I let them get away with this? If this, you know, if we're going to say that our organization, we can't just say that our organization is a family, we're going to behave like a family. And I'm not going to let one of my kids, you know, not live into who God designed them to be. I'm not going to let any of my kids, you know, not live into their full potential. If you try your hardest and you have a less than stellar month, I'm going to high five you because you tried your hardest. But the minute I feel like you're not giving, you're not living into your full potential and you're not giving your 100% best effort, we're going to have a conversation, right? Based on that why.
Yep.
And I think the second part of it was, you know, when you're talking about the how, I began doing the jobs that nobody else wanted to do. I began volunteering for things that nobody else wanted to do. I did not know that it helped me get ahead. When I was at Altel and I had my son and somebody called in sick, I was very intentional about, hey, if anybody is sick, I'm the first person you call. If anybody calls, you know, it's going to be late, I'm the first person you call. I wanted to be the one that the problem arose. Now, for me, it was selfish because I knew for me as a salesperson, more hours meant more commission, right? So I was doing it selfishly. But what ended up happening was, hey, all of a sudden there's this guy who's like rising through the ranks who like he goes above and beyond, you know? It's so easy. It's so easy in this day and age to turn heads within an organization like that, because all you have to do is a little bit more than what's being asked of you. And you're successful. You make money, you get promoted, you get opportunities, you know. But the first time that somebody in my organization says, I'm not gonna do that because that's not my job description, right? Like I wanna write a book called Shit Losers Say or something like that, right? And it's like, well, I'm not gonna do that because that's outside of my job description. I'm not gonna clean toilets because when I signed up to be a salesperson, you know, I'm above that. Okay, well, I'm going to have a loving conversation with you with candor and grace and say, maybe this isn't the job for you if you're not willing to do something that's outside of the scope of your responsibilities. So I just say, I got a kid. I want more hours. I want more sales. I want more commission. You know, I want to live in to be someone who my kids are proud to have as a father, someone who's proud, who my wife is proud to be married to. And that indirectly helped me and get leadership positions because no one was going to outwork me. A lot of people, you know, a lot of people around me were smarter. They were better salespeople, but they weren't willing to do things. They weren't willing to do anything it took to be successful.
I like that. I like the book idea, Shit Losers Say.
We could probably write that book together.
Right? We probably could. You know, it's funny.
That's not my job description.
So, you know, before I was in wireless, I don't know if I've ever told you this story. I ran bars and restaurants and one of the places I was the manager of. So very, very often we'd have like new cocktail waitresses or whatever. And I would always do it, guy or girl, really didn't matter. But if there was a large mess in the bathroom. Right. So you said, I'm not going to clean bathrooms. It's what reminded me. So there could be a mess and it will just say the bathroom's been destroyed. And I would look at the new person and I'd go, well, I'm not going to call it hazing, but you got to take you got to take your turn. We've all done it and whatever. And depending on what their reaction was, if their reaction was like, absolutely not, I'm not doing that. And very rarely did that actually happen. But occasionally I get somebody that was like, I am not doing that. There is no way I did. That is not my job description. I'm like, well, you're chapter one of shit losers, say, yep. 20 years from now. But if they reacted with, okay, where's the, you know what, where's the cleaning supplies? What do I do? Whatever. I'd be like, I'm just kidding. You're not doing that your first night. You're already stressed out enough. And then I would go do it. I would get it. Like normally I'm sitting there counting the money, doing the drawers, whatever. And that's a leadership moment, right? We've got to get that. They call that emotional collateral or whatever. Trying to get that buy-in of, oh, not only did he not make me do it, that dude just did it. Like, oh, okay. All right. Maybe he's not that big of a jack wagon. I'll tolerate him.
Well, and you said something that, you know, you said, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
You said something that is probably going to take us down another path. Like, I'm getting ready to take us. We were here, and now we're getting ready to take a right turn. So
good.
I think one of my favorite things to talk about to new leaders or people who are, you know, aspiring to be a new leader. You know, when I meet with people who are salespeople who want to become leaders, or, you know, my organization recently put together what's called emerging leaders. We put our emerging leaders who are salespeople that want to be leaders through a 2-week boot camp, and it's like an hour and a half a day for 2 weeks straight on leadership development. We talk about emotional intelligence. I put them through the 5 levels of leadership. We talk about all kinds of stuff. But one of the things I always ask people who want to get into a leadership position in their interview is I say, why do you want to be a leader? Like, why do you want to be a leader in the first place? Leadership is messy. It's ugly. It's dirty. It's sometimes terrifying. It's going to lead to your stress. Why do you want to be a leader? Right? Because I have to know, are they in it for the recognition? Are they in it for the money? Are they in it because they want to be in charge of people? And it is so easy to spot somebody who wants to get into leadership for the wrong reasons. But if you truly have a desire in your heart to want to develop the version of themselves, that's why you want to be a leader. It's not about recognition. Right. And people think, you know, you're gonna love this, and I know that you're gonna agree with me, but like, people often think when they get into a leadership position that, you know, okay, well, I've been in sales for 2 years, you know, I'm getting ready to be a leader. I get promoted to a store that has 4 salespeople. Now I'm in charge of these people, and these people are going to serve me as their leader. That's not it at all. People need to understand that the higher you get up in leadership, the more people that you are responsible to serve, to love, to develop, right? Being a leader, first and foremost, is a support role, and it's not about, I'm not here as your leader because you work for me. Nope. If I'm your leader, I work for you. I work around you. I work with you, and I'm here to support you. So people, people would save themselves a lot of trouble and a lot of stress if they just knew exactly what being a good leader really is. It's not about money. It's not about, you know.
100% agree. Now I'm gonna drop one on you. I had a sales coach on a couple weeks ago, a family friend, Vic Ng. He's phenomenal, and he put this in a way that I had not thought of. I know you and I have talked about this before, that just because you're a good salesperson does not mean that you're a good manager. And very often in organizations, we really screw that up, and we put somebody that was a good salesperson in charge of people. Right. And then very often that coincides with having all the wrong reasons for being in charge and whatever. And the way that he explained this, and I thought that this was absolutely brilliant, is that it's a problem with the organization. The organization should not make the next step of great salespeople to be in charge of other salespeople. They should just uncap their earning potential. Why would you incent somebody to go into a position where the acumen does not fit what they are great at?
Yeah.
Move them into management. Like, so you don't take a great basketball player and his next level of making better money is to coach the team.
Right. Exactly.
That's really stupid, actually. No, you don't want him to quit playing. You don't ever want him to quit playing. No, don't do that. It doesn't translate. Yeah. I never thought about it that way, but don't we incent the way most organizations are set up with commission structures, et cetera. Don't we incent great salespeople to move into a position that they may not be all that great at because they think that it's the logical next evolution, and it's not.
Yeah.
So what do we do about that? How do we fix that?
We literally blitzkrieg the comp plan, scratch everything, and start over.
Yes. Know? It's my favorite thing to do.
Just get rid of everything.
Blow it all.
Just bomb it.
Just blow it all up.
That's a great analogy too. You know, like that's a great analogy is the professional, you know, the professional athlete. Like, you know, there's no coach that ever made as much money as the number one player in the field, right? Like, yeah,
no.
Like LeBron James, you know, I'm sure he'll probably be a coach somewhere, right? But
maybe,
man, like, let's just pay him more money to keep doing what he's doing. Like, he didn't want to coach.
No, you know? Keep doing what he's doing. Why in the world? Or you take Jordan at his height and go, you know what? You are so good at this. Let's put you in charge of the team. Quit playing. Yeah. Let's put you in charge of the team. No, and, no, you would never do that.
This analogy here also backs one of my other leadership principles, and that's you don't have to have a title to be a leader, right? Like, you absolutely don't have to.
Nope.
Ron
sure
James,
don't.
As a player, did not keep him being a coach and coaching up his other teammates. Michael Jordan, right? Do you think?
Right.
Do you think, you know, the 96 Bulls or whatever, you know, would have been as good if Michael only focused on developing himself and not developing every other player around him?
No, not even remotely.
And that needs to be true in any organization, right? Like these people need to understand that what makes a leader is if they have influence and if they're making other people better. It's not about a title. You know, it's not about a title.
I have that written down for chapter 2 of Shit Losers Say. I'm the manager. One of my least favorite things, you know, I always used to tell people that. I'm like, well, okay, good for you. You're the manager. Listen to this. I hate the term manager. It's the only thing I ever managed was to screw things up. That's all I ever managed. Manager.
I managed my inbox.
Terrible. Yeah, I can't even manage my inbox. I'm on, you know, some people are inbox zero, inbox 1,000. It's terrible. Not good. But organizations can control that, right? So a great comp plan incents proper behavior. So why? Sure. One of the most important things you can do is director of sales, you know, VP of sales, that high level position. One of the most important things that you can do or should be doing is constantly evaluating. Are people, do I have the right buses? Are the right people driving those buses? And then are the right people sitting in the right buses with the right driver as well, right? So you're constantly evaluating all of that and just to make it more efficient and more natural and better. I remember one of the first things I did at Wireless Partners was take over a region that killed it, right? Like, it was turnkey. Our good buddy, Real Deal, as he would say, would go, this is turnkey, just take over. And I'm like, yeah, I'm changing everything. I'm changing everything. I thought he was gonna kill me. I'm changing everything.
Oh, I love it.
I see different people in different seats. I think it works better, right? Put people in a position to succeed.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, what is success? What does success look like in any given organization? And I think, you know, we have. Now, I'm speaking from a sales background, right? Like, I'm not speaking from, you know, healthcare or you know, anything else, just wireless sales. And we don't, but I'm pretty sure, you know, I feel confident saying that I'm pretty sure that a lot of organizations fail at this. And we have, right, we have all these different scoreboards and statistics around someone's performance, right? We evaluate people based on their performance alone, and that's their value to the organization, mm-hmm. and not whether they're actually a good person with a moral compass with integrity, right? Like we say, you know, so many companies out there say that these are our core values, but then they compensate and value people based on their sales performance, and it promotes imbalance. You know, like Simon Sinek, I'm a huge Simon Sinek fan.
Absolutely.
And you know, one of the things versus trust, you know, he's got this really cool YouTube video where he talks about, you know, the performance is this axis and the trust is this axis. And, you know, another way of saying that is, do I trust you with my money over here, or do I trust you with my wife, right? Performance versus right. trust. And you know, he says organizations, you know, even some organizations that perform at a very high level, you know, for example, the Navy SEALs, they would rather have somebody who is up on that axis with trust, but not necessarily as high of a performer, than extremely high performer who you don't trust, and how that person is more valuable to the organization, but that's not how we evaluate them, and that's not how we compensate.
Well, it's definitely not how we compensate them. I've never seen a comp plan that went into whether or not like we're nice to old ladies crossing the street or not. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like that.
Unfortunately, for the old ladies.
how would you work that into compensation? So what does that look like? What are the metrics? What are the metrics for being a good person?
Yeah, and it's not even fully about compensation, especially with our millennials, right? Like, I don't like to use the M word a lot because I don't like labels in general, but our generation, it's not as much about compensation and bonus structures as it is about where and how they feel valued in the organization and whether or not they're making an impact in an organization, right? So hard to measure, and it's really even challenging to identify in an interview with a candidate you're talking to, right? Because people can other of an interview, but you start asking questions like, you know, hey Adam, tell me when the last time, you know, you went out of your way to help someone that you didn't know and then didn't post it on your social media, right? Tell me about the last time you went out of your way, you inconvenienced a stranger, and you didn't post it on social media, right? And it's like instantly you can tell Adam whether they're full of crap or not, right? Because I interview good people, really good people, who, I mean, they look back and they roll their eyes and they say, wow, man, like, where do I start? I volunteer at this free store through my, go to the soup kitchens downtown. I volunteer with hashtag lunch bag and give homeless people food. Like, I do all these things. And it's not, I'm not being compensated for it. All these people are strangers. Like, that, I want that person on my team, you know?
Right.
But if someone number one struggles to find an answer, or number two, they use an example of someone in their circle who they already care about, like, maybe this isn't the best person to have on my team, right? Not that they're not a good person at the perform at a high level, but I can teach someone how to be a great leader. I can teach someone how to be a great salesperson. I can't teach someone how to not be a dick.
Yeah. You know,
that's a lot harder. Yeah. That's a lot harder to teach somebody.
I can just hit them with a cattle prod when they are. I don't know that I can teach them to not be.
You go walking in there with your tracksuit on and your gold.
No, that tracksuit never happened. That's a fairy tale. That's a tall tale. Totally happened.
He's coming in to fire somebody.
So let me back up.
But how do you compensate? I have no idea.
No, it's, you know, so you were talking about the good person that you want on their team, on your team, right? But that's some nice stuff to say, right? Like, oh yeah, I want the good guy on my team. But isn't it like, when it gets down to brass tacks, why is it that we want the good guy on our team? Is it not just, isn't it really just because we know how to motivate that person? We know what their language is. We know their currency. It's great having a good guy on your team, but I also know what language they're speaking. I know what currency matters to them. And that's also about me too. So.
Yeah. And I think part of it is trust. Is this person going to be me when I'm not in the store, right? Can I trust this person mm-hmm. to behave in a way that is ethical and with integrity? Does this person have character, or are they going to steal from the company? Are they going to treat our customers poorly? We've all had that person that we go into their store, they talk a great game, right? When we're there, but they behave in a completely different manner when you're not there. And that's integrity. Like, what are your behaviors?
Right. Falling off stools or whatever when you're not there. Yep. Yeah.
Exactly. So I want that person on my team that I can say, let's put our heads together. Let's come up with some behaviors. Okay. You're committing to these behaviors. And when I leave, those behaviors are actually going to happen. And they're actually going to take place.
Right? I agree. I agree with you. I agree with you, but I think that it's more than just, I like the good guys, or I like the feel good piece of it. It's more that I know how to talk to that person. I know we speak the same language, and I know that we can fail together, win together. And when we fail together, that's going to be a conversation that's heard. But it's we resonate with the same currencies.
Yeah, I agree.
And I was a bad guy, maybe I'd want bad guys on my team. I don't know. I don't think so.
I think attitude, the attitude of the people reflects the attitude of the leader. I think that anybody that comes on my team and cannot at least keep up with me a little bit, from a positivity standpoint, from an inspirational standpoint, they're not going to be annoying to them. And I think you're absolutely right. Like if I was a leader that lacked character and integrity, I would possess those values.
Well, you're definitely one of the most positive people I've ever known. You're always positive. Unless you have a migraine, you're positive. Other than that, Or if somebody told you to leave the call on Friday morning 5 minutes before the call was supposed to start because no one can get a hold of Ben, it maybe then is also a little grumpy. Man, oh man.
I said it.
Is he really? I wish he was. I hope he is. I miss that dude.
Me too, man.
Guy's awesome. Are you you still a good sales guy?
So it depends what you mean by selling.
That's a weird question, isn't it?
If I don't have to ring it out, I still got it. But it's the systems, man. Like, I am such an old dog when it comes to the systems. I'm the guy that will be holding the iPad, talking to the customer, giving him a great experience. Like, okay, well, this lady is going to upgrade her phone. She's going to add a line. She's going to do a tablet and a watch and do all these things. And then I look around and I go, can anyone do this? Can anyone activate all this stuff? Because I got nothing.
Just hearing you say that just gave me an aneurysm. Like, oh no. I know. What system do you use now? Like Morning Song or something? Eros is gone now.
In most of the stores now, they don't let me talk to customers.
You're not even allowed talking to customers anymore?
They only want me talking to employees, yeah. I'm a coach now. I'm not a salesperson. So
one of the funny things that was happening right before I left, I'm curious to get your take on this. Right before I left corporate sales world, I think my style of selling, and I would venture to say yours too. The reason that I was good, or the only reason I was good when I was good, if that makes sense, not trying to sound like I was a great salesperson, when I was good, if I was good, it was for this reason. It was because I had opportunity to educate to a buying decision. I had somebody who did not know what in the world they were getting themselves into, service, equipment, whether or not they needed this giant package, what they didn't know. And so it wasn't Glengarry, Glen Ross, Coffees for Closers. It was literally, let me educate you and allow you to make a purchasing decision. Now, when you get really good at that, they make the purchasing decision that you wanted them to make in the first place. But yeah, it was always about education. Now, towards the end of my time in wireless, I noticed the consumer becoming more and more educated prior to them coming in the door. So where were they getting educated? The internet, advertising, websites, etc. Hence, yeah, I don't know, you probably never knew this. This is why I went into marketing. I needed to get further up the sales cycle because yeah, I felt myself becoming obsolete in retail sales setting. That, and I didn't think I was a good employee and wanted to work for myself. But really, why marketing? I mean, I could have, you know, done a dog food store. You know, why marketing? Well, that was the reason, because to me, it was just sales in the absence of an actual person. It was all about the education that was occurring before they walked in the door. Could I affect that? And how did I affect that? Inadvertently, there was a video that Go Wireless played for everybody all about socialnomics. And I was like, whoa, that's cool. And I understand that. I need to be doing that. And that's what happened. Yeah. So that's where the question comes from. What does a person that believes in educating to the point of a buying decision, how do you function in today's world where everyone knows everything before they talk to anybody about anything?
Yeah. So the advantage, you know, our advantage is that the customers educate themselves on the fun, popular stuff, and not so much the products that they didn't know they needed before they walked in, right? So
there's still opportunity.
Because you know, as somebody in marketing, that, you know, when does someone buy something? When they have a perceived value in that product or service, right? If they don't see a mm-hmm. value in it, then they won't buy it, right? That mm-hmm. is not value to me, right? That's why a guy like me will pay $10,000 for Harley Davidson, but a guy like you thinks that's crazy, right? That's like a guy like you spending, you know, X amount of dollars on a new condenser microphone for your podcast. I'm thinking, oh, that's crazy. It's because the different things have different values to different people, right? And it's our jobs as the marketing person, it's our jobs as the salesperson to influence whether that value comes up to the level of the amount that product or service costs. So, you know, I'll give you an example. Someone comes in and, you know, I think, you know, a company that's done pretty good with their marketing strategy is Apple, right? We'll call it, you know, Apple's done a pretty good job. Everybody's going to have the latest, greatest iPhone, right? So they come in for that Apple because of the great marketing strategy of Apple. But what they didn't know when they came in is how they would benefit from an Apple Watch. And that's our job as the sales to educate that customer to the point where their perceived value matches how much that sucker costs. If they're only going to use it for a watch, they're not going to have the perceived value that it's worth $600. It's just going to be too expensive, right? But if we can educate them on fitness tracker, keeps track of your blood pressure, if you have blood pressure issues, you know, if we can talk to you from a consultative selling standpoint and build value, that's when we get the customer to say yes. You know, we have vehicle diagnostic machines now that communicate with an app on your phone that if you're ever in an accident, they'll alert EMS and they will rush to your location based off of the GPS location of that little device. You will never, ever see an advertisement on TV for that device. You come in for an Apple iPhone. It's my job and my team's job to talk to you and educate you about that device you didn't even know Verizon carried, and then build a perceived value in that so that you want to buy it.
Right. What's that thing called?
Makes sense. It's called a Hum, H-U-M.
Hum.
Hum by Verizon. Yeah. What, or if you want to track a teenager, you want to track a teenager, you put this in their car, you pair it up to the app on your phone. It'll drop little breadcrumbs on a map so you can see everywhere they've gone. Or if they're in an accident, EMS will come. So
throw that. But
nobody knows we carry that because
right.
It's never advertised. Like, you're not going to see, you know, a little vehicle diagnostic device at halftime on you know, Thanksgiving football game. It's not going to happen.
Isn't there have they abandoned the home phone stupid thing, please?
No, we have not.
Oh, no.
It's hilarious where the home phone companies are charging 50, 60, 70 bucks a month. But we just encourage our customers, cut the cord, man. It's time.
Come on, man. Is there still the dog collar thing? Wasn't there a dog thing?
I don't think so.
I think there was a dog thing.
If you dig real deep on the Verizon website, you might be able to find and activate.
I think there was a dog thing. I'm like, I'm going to throw that thing in my wife's trunk. What is this thing? This shock collar.
Yeah. Well, here's another scenario where, you know, perceived value comes into play. Verizon sells these little thing called Gizmo watches now, and it's basically a GPS tracker for kids, right? So if they leave the house and they go, you can literally pull up your phone as one of their caregivers and see exactly where their location is. Again, you'll never see that advertised, you know, in a commercial or an ad or anything. But before I had kids that, you know, were 7, 8 years old plus, I didn't have a value in that, right? Because I didn't need it. But man, for $5 a month to be able to track my kid wherever they go, as soon as my kids got into ballet lessons, soccer practice, basketball practice, cheerleading, like all that stuff, man, like I would have paid four times that much to be able to have the services that little silly watch provided. So
I can only imagine the conversations around that. Somebody coming in the store going, man, these little dots aren't going anywhere. It's like, yeah, man, you've been quarantined for the last 4 months, Dumbo. No one's going anywhere. You're all sitting there.
Flying off the shelf right now.
You're all watching reruns of MASH and your kids hate you. Like, no.
Are your kids leaving their watches at home all day?
Yeah. No one's going anywhere, man. Oh, man, that's terrible. So tell me a little bit more about, so you got certified with Maxwell. So you leave Wireless Partners, you go on with Conway, you're doing great things over at Conway, and that was sort of you and Alex Yeader getting back together at that point. He left Wireless Partners at some point, right? I've never met him.
He left Wireless Partners before you got there.
And I know the name. I know who he is.
Yep, he was with Chris Jordan for a spell, running some stores in Ohio for Chris Jordan when they were Wireless Zone. The Steelyard store that's like 12 minutes from my house used to be one of Alex's when it was before when it was Chris Jordan's, and now we own it again. But the way the John Maxwell thing came up is, you know, I have a burning desire in my heart to help people get better, right? Like, that's, you know, if I have a secondary why, it's to help people get from where they are to where they want to be. And that process really started for me when I was working as a sales market manager at TCC, and Alex called me up and he said, hey, you know, Conway Communications is thinking about market. Do you know anybody who would be, you know, at the caliber of leader that would want to come work for us and help us open up stores in Ohio? So he was just calling me for a referral for someone else. And I thought to myself, well, I could probably do that. I could probably help Conway Communications open up stores. And I told Alex, I said, I can't think of anybody do that in my personal network, but how about I come and do it for you? So he was calling to get a referral and he got me instead. I don't know if he's happy about that or not, but
I'd say he's happy.
It's worked out. It's worked out. So probably a year ago now, you know, Alex called me and he said, you know, I've been studying John Maxwell, reading the John Maxwell books, The Minute with Maxwell, all the podcasts and the Facebook group and everything for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And I've been a student of John Maxwell's long before I, you know, started this certification path. But Alex called me and, you know, he said that they wanted to work on certifying me as a professional coach to help our organization and to mentor and coach people in our organization, but then also to do it as, you know, as a side hustle outside of the organization, if I had context outside of the organization. And I, when he told me he wanted me to be John Maxwell certified coach, like I didn't know how much that was going to, that meant to me until, you know, I literally just was sitting there with tears in my eyes, like this John Maxwell leadership guru, I was going to get to study and get certified under him and his development. It's called the John Maxwell group. And so in February, I started training and I started working through the certification program. It took me 7 months to get through all the material and to get trained and be part of their mentorship program. And then I got certified, was it last weekend or the weekend before?
I think it was 2 weeks ago. Yeah,
two weekends ago, I went through my online, it was the International Maxwell Certification. Normally they would send us all to Orlando, Florida, to a big Marriott Inn hotel and conference center. But because of the Rona, we had to do it all on an online platform, which was very cool. Very cool. So yeah, I am now a certified John Maxwell professional coach and speaker.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So what does that look like? How do you get rolling with that? And who are you looking to work with?
Yeah. So right now my goal is to work with, you know, to work with people within Conway Communications organization and coach people, you know, from a structural standpoint. It can be one-on-one coaching inside or outside the organization. It can be one-on-one coaching. They do these things called, I'll be doing these things called John Maxwell masterclasses, where I'll take content from one of John Maxwell's books and they break it down into, you know, a 4 week to 8 week, once a week session, where they call it a masterclass, where I'll have anywhere between, you know, 6 and 10 people in the masterclass with me that I'm coaching as a group, as a team. So mm-hmm. I really prefer the one-on-one, to be honest with you. But the one-on-one coaching can get a little expensive for one individual person. So somebody who wants to be developed by a John Maxwell coach, but maybe doesn't want to shoulder the burden of one-on-one coaching, the financial burden, passes as well. So I'm really, really excited. You know, when it comes to this idea of coaching, I had no idea really what a coach did until working my way through this training. And you'll love this. You'll get a kick out of this. You know, the word coach, the word professional coach, has just been absolutely misused and abused. You know, you look at someone's Instagram account and it says that they're a life coach. Okay, well, what does that even mean, right? Like this coach gets thrown around so much. And what I'm trying to educate people on is that what I do is not typical of what a quote unquote life coach does, right? Because really what quote unquote life coaches are is really they're trainers training people how to do things, and it's their own trainer's ideas that they're trying to impress upon the recipient. Really, that's not what coaching is about at all. What coaching is, as opposed to training, is first knowing and understanding that the answers to a recipient's success does not lie within the coach. It lies within the recipient. It's the coach's responsibilities to get that recipient to become self-aware and to start drawing the answers out of that person. Do you see what I'm saying?
You're there to facilitate self-awareness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I didn't even Like, I was excited to be part of the program and didn't even realize what being a coach was. You know, there are values to a trainer, right? If you're training someone, it's because they need the training, right, to facilitate something. I have been trained to be a coach, right? And then coaching is something completely, completely different.
Right. If somebody's listening and wants to get involved, what would that look like, Chris?
Yeah. So it's really kind of a wishy-washy answer, but it's really up to that recipient, right? Like, if they want weekly coaching, I'll make space for weekly coaching. If they want once a month, I'll make space for what once a month. You know, it's my job as a coach to really do whatever that recipient wants. You know, if we want to meet once a quarter and that's all you want and that's all you feel you need, then that's what we're going to do. You know, my job is not to tell a person what they need. It's my job, like you said, to get someone to be self-aware about what they need and what, you know, what they want to work on. And a lot of it's through goal clarity. You know, I meet with some people.
Right.
They don't even know what those are. You know, they don't even know how they want to be developed. They don't even know how they want to develop themselves. So the first session or two is just sitting down and, you know, let's clarify some goals. I want you to discover some behaviors that, you know, part of being your coach is I'm going to hold you accountable to those things in a loving way. You know, the behaviors and the answers are going to come from you, but it's my job as your coach to hold you to those things. Like that's the main difference really between a coach and a therapist, right? Like a therapist listens to your problems, right? And like, I'm in no way saying that a therapist doesn't have value. I actually saw one for a few months, you know, a couple of years ago and found huge, tremendous value in it. So I'm not devaluing what a therapist says at all, but the difference is, you know, it's not a therapist's job to hold you accountable to behaviors, right? It's a therapist to walk you through your grief and your struggle and your anxiety and your stress and give you some pointers, right, of what you can do to make some changes. But it's my job as a coach to get you to become self-aware of the behaviors that you need to do to find success, clarify your goals, live into those goals, and then hold you accountable to those behaviors, right? Like I said, in non-judgmental way. You know, people love this process because there's no judgment. There's absolutely 100% no judgment. But at the same time, you know, I love you too much as a coach to let you stay where you're at if you've told me you want me to hold you accountable to getting better.
Right. Well, that's that great conversation. You told me that you wanted to go from here to here.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. So what's.
And you told me how you were going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do people get in touch with you? We'll do show notes and everything for the episode. So how do they get in touch with you? Do you have a website or your LinkedIn or.
I don't have a website. I am on LinkedIn. Speaker. So I'm on there as Chris Burns. Please, you can share my cell phone number. You can share my email address with anybody, you know, after the call that is interested in it. Really what I like to do is I like to have free masterclasses going all the time. So like if you and five of your buddies want to do a free masterclass, I'll put together a free masterclass where you don't pay a dime, you know, maybe bring some snacks with you and a beverage and we'll meet, or maybe we'll just do it over Zoom because of COVID, where I'll do like a free 4-week masterclass where you can attend the class once a week for 4 weeks. And then we should
talk about that. I like that.
Yeah. I'm always going to try to have at least two free masterminds going all the time. And then, you know, I'm going to build my business through referrals. And, you know, once people are in the free class and they see what a great value the coaching is going to bring to them, it is it's an exceptionally powerful method to getting better at whatever it is you want to get better at and clarifying your goals. So
I would totally agree with that.
I'm going to be doing a ton of free content. So
okay.
I'm pretty excited to get a bunch of free.
Cool. Well, my man, I'm going to bring it in for a landing here. So I always end with five questions because it's you. Okay. I'm going to do six rapid fire questions. Ooh, yeah. I should have done a 5+2, but I'm going to do a 5+1. Anyway, are you an Apple or an Android guy these days?
I'm an Apple guy. Unfortunately, I know.
I thought you would go back and forth. Weren't you a Windows phone guy at one point?
Here's the thing, man. If we meet 6 months from now, I'm going to be an Android. I kind of go back and forth. I like to stay relevant.
Flopper. Yeah.
You know, I use Apple because of that's what my family uses, and I'm on that FaceTime pretty regularly. But you know, I'm looking at that Note 20 with just goo goo eyes right now.
And a pineapple on a pizza.
What's that?
Is ham and pineapple on a pizza?
I'm going to go with yes.
Okay. Mountains or the beach?
What's that?
Mountains or the beach?
Oh, beach. Absolutely the beach.
Don't you go to like Bear Lake or something in Canada every year and you say beach?
I have this Native American olive skin, and man, when I spend a couple hours in the sun, man, I am just sun-kissed. So, but yeah, we go to Whitefish Falls up in Northern Ontario, but there's no mountains up there that I'm climbing. So old, sore.
All right. Beach it is. Mentor or mentee?
Oh man. Can I say both? Is it cliche of me to say both? Because
I think it's got to be both, doesn't it?
And let me explain why. Because when it comes to coaching, I have a coach, right? Because I can't get, it's going to be very hard with integrity for me to understand the value in coaching if I don't have a coach too, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
I try not to buy anything from anybody that's not buying what they're selling.
So I agree. I think you got to be both.
Yeah.
Brussels sprouts, yay or nay?
Yay. Yeah. Absolutely.
I like the Brussels. Do you have an air fryer? I do.
Take Brussels sprouts. Put them in a bag. Drizzle a little olive oil on there, and then shake in some seasoned salt or even some salt and pepper. Throw them in the air fryer on 370 for 20. You'll never dislike. Sprouts again. You're welcome.
For how long?
Mic drop. Boom. 12 minutes at 370 degrees.
12 minutes, 370.
Soft. Oh yeah. Mix them nice and soft with a crispy outer layer. Oh, they're so
good. Yeah. Love them. Yeah. And then last question, what's your favorite sandwich?
Oh, what's my favorite sandwich? Man. I'm gonna go with the West Side Monte Cristo from Melt Bar and Grilled.
There you go. West Side Monte Cristo.
Dagwood. They take a Dagwood on Texas toast.
Yeah.
They batter it and deep fry it, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they sprinkle powdered sugar on the top, and they give you raspberry dipping sauce.
Yeah, it's like a French toast sandwich.
It's so good.
Yeah, I need one of those in my life. That sounds amazing. I haven't had a Monte Cristo in a long time. That sounds great.
Oh, man. Yeah.
All right, my dude. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Secret Ingredient Livecast, where we believe that everyone has a story behind a story, and that's where their secret ingredient lives. Unleashing that secret ingredient through a combination of personalized content, social media, and paid advertising is the best way to build relationships you need to grow your business today. Today, we learned all about my buddy, Chris's secret ingredient. I want to thank Chris for taking the time out of his day to come on and hang with us just for a little bit. Thanks, Chris.
It was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much, Adam, for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome, man.
Ever feel like your marketing strategy is like throwing spaghetti at the wall? Well, at Digital Sandwich, we literally do that. Introducing the Spaghetti Session, a half-day extravaganza where we map out your entire year of marketing on the wall. No more guesswork, just strategy. We dive deep into messaging, content pillars, posting calendars, ideal customer profiles, offers, you name it. Imagine leaving with a plan so clear it sticks better than well-cooked spaghetti. So grab a fork and join us at our next spaghetti session. Digital Sandwich. We make marketing stick.